Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, welcome everybody. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
And from me, Matt Kelly, in the great metropolis of London. And which great metropolis are you still in, Matt Danconi? You're a lucky man.
I'm in the small hamlet of Manhattan.
Fantastic. Well, let's get stuck straight into our questions. Producer Ollie, first question, please. Does the news that Talk TV is effectively shutting down and that GB News lost £75 million in 2 years mean all our fears over right-wing TV in the UK are unfounded? And that's from Richard in Wandsworth.
Well, I'm obviously glad that it hasn't become a huge growth area. There was a lot of boosterish language around the launch of both channels. Overall, thumbs up. I guess the only thing I'd say is not to be too complacent, because if you think about Fox TV, Fox News, which is the great model, and I guess these channels were aspiring to be, but I think Fox News isn't sustainable either. Where the Fox News energy in the US has now gone is to podcasting and independent media. And to take the obvious example, Joe Rogan gets 190 million monthly downloads. Across a month, Sean Hannity, the big Fox News presenter, gets 2.9 million viewers, and he costs 20 million a year compared to Rogan's 100 million. So the value for money is pretty clear. So I'm not sanguine just because they're failing. However, I'm glad that they haven't got further than they have. I think GB News has entered the political bloodstream, probably for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Because of its outrageous overlap with conservative politicians, which we've had cause to talk about, haven't we, Matt?
Yeah.
I mean, quite a lot.
I'm a bit reluctant to lump the two together. I know why people do, but I think Talk TV, you've got an attempt to recreate Fox News by Rupert Murdoch, who, whatever you think of him, is somebody who's got a lot of experience in broadcasting and business, you know, and knows what he's doing. And the fact that he's pulled the plug on what were clearly unsustainable losses is a business decision. And, you know, there's a rationale. What worries me is that GB News is owned by right-wing ideologues who don't care about the business decision and are happy to lose, maybe not happy, but willing to lose 75 million quid over 2 years. And that terrifies me to a greater degree than the fact that the businesses aren't working. Because if you've got people with effectively bottomless pockets who are willing to shove their ideologies down people's throats because they're very good at how they do it, then that's a greater challenge, I think, to the national discourse than just the fact that the business models are in trouble. You know, that's what we should be paying attention to, is that you've got billionaires willing to suck it up just so that they get their far-right views across.
And there's a relentlessness to GB News. It gets mentioned a lot. The numbers are not huge, but it punches above its weight, and it's scrappy and gets involved. And even when the stories are bad, you know, someone's being sacked, someone's said something totally outrageous, it gets mentioned. And so whilst I, clearly it's a million miles from my own politics, I think you have to be ever so slightly careful about it, because to your point, Matt, the people behind it are zealots. They really are.
Yeah. Also, I mean, just finally on my point, Talk TV has got right-wing presenters, but they're all what you would describe as journalists, you know, and you wouldn't, I don't think you'd describe Piers Morgan as right-wing or he floats around all over the political spectrum. So, but GB News is pretty relentless in its kind of political ideology.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
very different machines. Okay. Well, thank you, Richard in Wandsworth, for that question. Next question, please.
I live in Brighton. In the last 10 years, but especially in the last couple of years, I've seen homelessness get worse and worse. It feels like it's going back to the bad old days of the 70s and 80s. Keir Starmer's talked about fixing it, but I'm not sure what he plans to do. Do you have any thoughts on how Britain can do better? Matt, I know you're thinking about housing issues a bit at the moment.
Yeah, I have been. I've been wanting to, because it's one of those issues that, I mean, well, I think we should distinguish between homelessness and specifically what I suspect Katie's talking about, which is rough sleeping. But they're both they're both enormous problems, and they're both problems that are growing. I was thinking about how we cover this in the New European, because, you know, I think like most people, the sight of people sleeping rough, especially in winter, is something that really, you know, it's depressing to see. And there are solutions that have been trialed, and happily I've seen talk, you know, on Crisis's website and the Big Issues website of solutions that are being brought in and trialed in the UK that seem to be working, notably the idea of housing first as a policy. Have you come across this concept of housing first?
No, I haven't, no.
So it was established in Finland, where they've practically eradicated rough sleeping. And it's based on the very human concept that if someone's not got a house, you give them one. And not only do you give them the house, but you give them all of the support that they need to get back into society and become fully contributing, healthy members of society again. That what you don't do is shove them in hostels, and you don't put them on benefits, and you don't tap dance around the edges of the causes of the problems. You directly address it. And in Finland, it's, like I say, it's been massively successful, and it's been adopted in the UK as well. And when I was researching this, I was quite astonished by it, because you don't hear too much about it. But this idea, increasingly, there's lots of councils taking up this idea of housing first and dealing with the problem directly. That seems really encouraging. Obviously, it's in the short term, it's one of these things that's really expensive, but over the long term, it pays back, you know. And what you're not doing is paying all of these social care costs, the endless kind of cleaning up after the mess of homelessness. But what's also undeniable is that rough sleeping in the UK is on the rise again, and the various, very hard to work out exactly how many, but according to the government's own figures, on one night in June 2023, there were 3,000 people rough sleeping in the UK. And according to a London-only survey, over the course of a year last year, there were 10,000 people had rough slept at some point over the course of that year. And you have to again ask yourself, is this acceptable in 2024 in the United Kingdom, the sixth or seventh biggest economy in the world? And I think we've got to do better somehow. And it's a big opportunity for Starmer to live up to his promises and actually put some concrete policies in action.
Yes, I think everyone who is judgmental about rough sleepers should read John Healy's book, The Grass Arena, which is all about, you know, what it's like. And it's a horrifying and you know, kind of humbling book, because of course, you know, people who have, I mean, this is why what you just said, Matt, it's so fascinating, because the problem with rough sleeping is that you are, because you have no base, no dignity, nothing to do, you obviously, and you're spending your time with people often who have mental health problems of a very serious character, as you indeed might yourself, it's a disaster. escape. And you need something like being put in a proper housing first before you can even start to address the other. So that was very interesting. The other thing is just the other sort of side of the equation is we need, as we all know, more houses, and we've been saying that for 30 years more. Starmer has promised 1.5 million houses in the first 5 years. That's not enough, but let's hope he sticks to it. He promises he's going to be ruthless with planning, red tape and NIMBYism and all the things that have always stopped housing. You know, I've got a real bee in my bonnet about this, because I don't care whether more housing ruins the Jane Austen view of someone's second home. I just don't care. You know, when there are people who are genuinely feeling they'll never be able to own their own home, or indeed people who won't be able to have a home, you know, the view from people's second houses is quite low down my scale of priorities.
Yeah.
But the problem is that so many decision makers have second homes.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's humanity. You know, that's how decisions are taken.
Yeah.
So if Starmer is going to do this, he has to be. This really is, oddly enough, one of those things where you have to have an absolute iron fist and just say, nope, I'm not putting up with that. Nope, I'm not putting up with that. No, I want the houses built.
Yeah, great. And if you want to know more about this policy, of this idea of housing first, you can Google it, and there's quite a lot of information. And it was an eye-opener to me. So if you're interested in the problem of homelessness and rough sleeping, do check that out on Google. It's very interesting. Next question, please, Ollie.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
History teaches us that choiceful cooperation and collaboration are the basis of security and growth. Relationships are key. What is the best way of achieving this in a populist, polarized system? James from Spotify. Very broad question. Over to you, Matt.
It's quite broad, isn't it? Thank you for the question. I wouldn't say history just teaches that, unfortunately. I mean, I think, you know, individualism, acquisitiveness, violence, and so on have, sad to say, had their moments. And this is the problem. I don't think it is manifest that collaboration, I mean, strategically and in the long term, it works. But it's very you're fighting against human nature and animal spirits all the time. How do you show that collaboration is the best means of protecting us all and enriching us all? Well, you need to do that more than ever in the 21st century, which is all about international cooperation and intranational cooperation. And I think it boils down to an old idea, actually, but one that's in a terrible state, which is that of the social contract, which is that we're not actually, as some right-wingers claim, atomized individuals who just obey the law and pay our taxes and then don't do anything else with other people. We actually interact with one another and depend on one another in ways that aren't just market-based. And COVID ought to have taught us that, and it didn't, but it that was the proper lesson. And climate change ought to be teaching us that. And if we don't learn that lesson soon, we're history. I think it needs leadership. I think it needs people who are politicians, who are prepared to speak hard truths about the necessity of collaboration and the fact that the fruits of collaboration don't necessarily come about in, you know, one Twitter cycle, yeah, or X cycle, I suppose we must call it now. And along with that, not just talking, and I'm really hoping that the manifestos and the election paraphernalia of the general election coming up don't just talk about aspiration, individual social mobility, individual and family wealth. They do talk about the social dimension and the fact that we are not only are we better ethically together, but also the problems of the 21st century require collaboration. And I don't see that spelled out enough.
No. And I think it's tempting to look at James's question and think immediately of international challenges politically, but also you can look at it completely, yes, from the bottom of the pyramid and say, you know, how much, yeah, cooperation and collaboration do we perpetrate within our communities, you know, and how much do we talk to each other and work as communities to make things better? And I obviously, you know, I'm from Liverpool, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, I definitely feel that there was much more sense of community will in those days and in that geography than there is in the London of 2024 that I live in. You know, I feel like, yes, everybody feels a sense of powerlessness here to do anything. And a government or a council or an anybody that could structuralize communities so that they could actually effect change, that would be a really transformational policy, I think.
Yes, and the way in which you rediscover agency 90% of the time is through groups. You know, we're encouraged now to think that the only form of agency is that you have as an individual because you've got a really nice phone or a bigger house than your neighbor. But actually, in things that count, agency is discovered in the collective.
Totally right. Okay, fascinating question, James. Thank you. Hope the answer lived up to the question. Next question, please, Ollie.
John Pinder on Spotify. John Pinder on Spotify.
I love Spotify. That's Spotify. Even better.
Spotify is a new mucus-based app that we won't be advertising on this respectable podcast. John Pinder on Spotify. If he becomes PM after the next election, do you think Keir Starmer will introduce a fairer electoral system, or will he be content to be a one-term prime minister before the Tories return?
Wow. Well, that's the second half of the question sort of turned in a nasty direction. I don't think that's true at all. I suspect he's going to get a massive landslide, and will be probably a two-term prime minister, and won't change a bloody thing about the electoral system because neither Labour nor the Tories have any interest in doing so, you know, because we live in a two-party system, for better or worse.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think it's a priority at all for them. I think that they all three main parties, or perhaps I should, the main parties then, Labour, Conservatives, and even some parts of the Lib Dems, heaved a heavy sigh of relief in 2011 when the vote on changing the Westminster voting system to AV, the alternate vote, failed. It didn't even animate the public. I don't think it's a priority now. I agree with Matt. I think that first past the post actually tends to keep incumbents in, and I think that Starmer is relying on that because he wants a decade of renewal. So whatever the rights and wrongs of PR are, I really don't think it's going to happen in the near to medium term future.
And we're doing a piece in the New European next week about what would life be and how what would be the effect of a Tory wipeout. Because did you see that extraordinary poll the other day where
20%
where they were, but they weren't even the opposition. The Liberal Democrats became the opposition. Can you imagine? I mean, extraordinary.
I think anything is possible now because it was interesting watching the budget in New York. It felt like watching, you know, the proceedings of a town council. And that's not because budgets don't matter, but because this one so obviously didn't.
Yes.
and it just had that sense of an ending. Yeah. It really did.
All right. Well, thank you, John Pindar, for that question. Next question, please. From Cliff in Dundee. Will ultra-processed foods one day be looked on like cigarettes are today? That's an interesting question.
Yes, they will be. They'll be legal, but you'll only be able to eat them outdoors. So that, which is a very effective means of cutting it down. It's a very important question. It isn't quite analogous because the difference is that nobody needs to smoke. I mean, they need to smoke if they're addicted, but everyone needs to eat, and therefore it's more complicated. And the problem is, as we've discussed before on the pod, ultra-processed foods are full of garbage, but they tend to be cheaper. You can't realistically... you can label things, you can teach people in schools how to eat well, but the real changes have to be quite radically interventionist, I think, and to do with keeping the price of good food down and perhaps taxing ultra-processed foods and taking measures that ensure that people really can afford good food that they can cook themselves. And that's a big cultural shift because at the moment we live in a delivery society.
Yeah, I'm going to take a slightly harder line, and I'm going to say that I agree with you, people have to eat, but they don't have to eat shit. And I wonder, will there come a point as scientific medical evidence stacks up that some of the things that we've been eating and told to eat and have had marketed at us relentlessly for 30, 40 years now are actually doing us harm? Whether you know whether people will start seeing them as you know carcinogenic for sure, but also would people at some point start saying, well, people knew this was bad and they kept on selling us this crap, they kept on marketing it.
Yes.
And you know, could you bizarrely, here's words you will never hear again on this podcast: I agree with Boris Johnson. Right, he wrote a column in the Mail on Sunday saying there should be warning labels on ultra processed foods with pictures of massive bellies and, you know, people, you know, unable to walk up flights of stairs and so on and so forth. And I do think that the labeling that we've got at the moment on food is utterly inadequate. I think we might have mentioned it before.
Sure,
that you can have a can of full fat Coke with 3 green lights and 1 red light, which is basically saying 75% good for you. You know, it's absolutely horrific. I'm following a guy on Instagram, a former bodybuilder called Eddie, who is doing amazing, amazing work on trying to convince people not to eat ultra processed foods. And the one thing he's made me do is look at the ingredients on all of the stuff in the house. So
it's scary, isn't it?
I give my youngest son, right, Cheerios in the morning, and I look at the ingredients yesterday, and there's about 4 different descriptions of sugar. They find ways of cloaking the harmful products, and they different glucose, this, all this, that, and the other, but it's all sugars, and they bold up in the typography and the existence, the wheat, the oat, the barley, you know, all of this stuff, all the good stuff, they bold up and they put in a very light typeface all these different kinds of sugars. And then you get into the preservatives. And this bodybuilder guy is brilliant. He waves a bagel around on his Instagram channel. He says, I bought this 12 months ago and it's still edible, right? It's like, something's got to be wrong. He's awake, and he keeps saying, his refrain is, wake up. You know, this is killing you. And I, you know, it's hard to disagree, I think.
I think sugar will be, in 30 years' time, sugar will have the sort of significance of high tar cigarettes.
Right.
You know, it's been one of the great nutritional awakenings of the past 20 or 30 years has been quite how bad refined sugar is for you.
Yeah.
And that is new because, you know, as you say, the whole cereal industry, biscuits, everything, you know, it's all based on the idea that a little bit of what you fancy is fine. And actually, it really isn't.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's going to get more and more attention in the public. And the public, I think
agree.
They'll turn against manufacturers who've been slipping in all this crap that we've been eating for so long. But
Cliff,
thank you from Dundee.
Thank you, Cliff.
Home of the Dundee cake, something that you shouldn't eat anymore. But
don't eat Dundee cake. Go to Dundee, but don't eat Dundee cake.
And that's it for this week's Q&A session. Get your questions in as ever and any feedback you like to 2matts@tnepublishing.com. That's the number 2matts@tnepublishing.com. Or if you listen on Spotify, you can message us there very easily indeed. We're back with a new main episode on Friday. Please remember our subscription offer. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/2matts. There's a link in the show notes. If you like what you're listening to on this podcast, I guarantee you will love getting the New European newspaper every week. Thanks as ever to our producers at Rethink Audio, led by Ollie Peart. And until next Friday, have a fantastic Sunday, folks.
Have a great Sunday.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.